Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The last several days have been a painful reminder of just how vulnerable all of us can be to the dangers of severe winter weather. It can happen quicker than we can imagine and put us in harm's way for longer than we can tolerate. We saw it happen on I-95 in Northern Virginia, but it can also happen at home. Well, tonight, we give you the information you need to know to keep you safe when the next winter storm hits, wherever you are. My guests are home safety expert Charlie Hawkins and Regina Ali, public and government affairs manager for AAA Mid-Atlantic. If you have a comment, if you have a question about staying safe during winter storms, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Charlie, thank you so much for joining the program again.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
Regina, good to talk to you again. Been a minute.
Nice to talk to you, Harold. Thanks for having me. Yes, it's been a minute. Good to talk to you, Val. Thanks for having me.
Let me start with you, because the incident in Northern Virginia on I-95, motorists stranded for more than 36 hours. I'm sure you watched that, you know, with a great deal of dread. Talk to me about what was going through your mind as the reports came through of what those people were going through.
Absolutely. It was certainly horrifying to watch. I would certainly agree. To be perfectly honest, my heart was going out to everyone that was there, but my thoughts were particularly with people that had children or perhaps elderly parents or elderly people in the car. I can almost probably somewhat selfishly admit that my husband and I had just returned from Florida just a few days earlier, mm-hmm. and was obviously thanking God that we weren't in that as well. But I think most importantly, what it reminded us of AAA was, like you said, I mean, this could happen anywhere at any time. You could run out to the store and end up getting stuck in traffic if there's a crash or something, but certainly what we saw on I-95 was unprecedented, and it really illustrated to us the importance of why you should have an emergency kit in your car, to include extra blankets, extra coats, gloves. I don't think anyone is ever planning on being stranded in their car, particularly in cold weather conditions, for as long as they were. But certainly my heart did go out to everyone out there, absolutely.
Do you think that drivers did not take the threat of this winter storm seriously?
Well, I obviously can't speak for what is going on in people's minds, but what I can say is obviously this was on the heels of a holiday weekend. Many people were off on Monday. So I know of some people that were coming, say, from places warmer and from the south that were maybe traveling northbound that may have not been even aware of what the conditions were. I mean, certainly planning is important. We always try to say at AAA to make sure you plan your route, that you check ahead of time. But, again, it sounded like the storm, apparently we had warm weather here for a few days, and then all of a sudden this storm started out as cold rain and then turned into ice and snow. So I think it's always easy to play Monday morning quarterback, and it's certainly not fair to blame the motorists for what they encountered. But the only thing you probably can do is try to be prepared in instances like this, because we don't always have control over them.
And I'll talk a little bit more about how best to prepare. But I also want to bring Charlie into this, because the problems, Charlie, were not just on the roads. The problems were also in the home. At the height of the storm, or I should say at the height of the aftermath of the storm, there were 500,000 people without power in the DMV. And that had to have caused some particularly difficult situations because the snow was heavy, power lines went down, trees were down, knocking down power lines as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would agree. And, you know, it's one of those unfortunate times where we would love to be prepared. Of course, we say that to ourselves after the aftermath. But once again, unfortunately, I'm one of those citizens who grew up in the DMV my entire life. And our winter weather or our weather in general is always crazy. You really don't know what you're going to get until it actually happens. I would say that most didn't prepare for this winter storm just because, it, you know, last year it was more of like, oh, we're going to get 20 inches of snow throughout the year and we may have only gotten 3. So just the iffiness, I would say, of our winter weather or our history of our winter weather definitely caused a lot of harm this year. And it's just very unfortunate that we don't have that mindset in general just to be safe all around. And this is just not for winter weather. This is also for, like, scorching hot weather or just anticipating those extremes.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about keeping you safe during severe winter weather. If you have a comment or if you have a question, certainly if you encountered some unexpected challenges over the past several days, we'd like to hear from you as well as it relates to this winter weather. So please, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And I would say that, Regina, to Charlie's point, this was the most severe winter storm that the DMV has seen since 2019. Mm-hmm. We haven't had snow like this in 3 years. As he said, there were predictions last year and even the year before where we were expected to have several inches and basically we may have received a dusting. And as a result, perhaps there may have been a sense of malaise for a lot of people because we just knew that it wasn't going to happen until it happened.
Right. That I totally concur with what you're saying and agree with Charlie. You know, the weather is unpredictable a lot here, but again, I do think that first of all, and we don't know. We apparently the storm happened very quickly, and you know we've had warm, mild days leading up to it. I was in Florida, but I'm told it was mild here most of last week. So you can see where people may have been comfortable that are local, but I do think it's really important to note that probably a lot of people were traveling, returning from their holiday travel, but you really can't overstate the importance of being prepared for it. But I do think what Charlie says, right, how many times did we hear last year, oh, we're going to get a big snowstorm, and then, you know, there's barely a dusting. So I think it's easy to become, you know, a little complacent when that happens, but I think in many cases people honestly may have not known what was, you know, what was in store,
and,
so to speak, or underestimated what was in store. And it sounds like a lot of it happened very quickly.
I mean, to your point, the day before the storm hit, it was 63 degrees in the DMV, 63 degrees. And
right.
So we're certainly talking about a difference of 45, 50 degrees, but one day to the next. And so that really made things difficult. I want you to kind of walk us through some of the more obvious and not so obvious things that people should have, Regina, if they are expecting winter weather, things that that will sustain them throughout this entire winter season, because a lot of people are thinking, even in some extreme cases, there are some things I'm not going to put all of this stuff in my car. I'm not a survivalist. I'm not going to have a fallout shelter in my car. But the reality is, as we've seen earlier this week, you may need something akin to that. Kind of walk us through in detail some of the things that AAA suggests.
Sure. Sure, absolutely happy to. So, and to Charlie's point, it's not even just winter weather, to be honest with you. You could be stranded any time of the year, but obviously in the cold, that's a whole different set of circumstances, right? You need to stay warm. You need to stay bundled up. So first and foremost, we always suggest having some sort of an emergency car kit in your vehicle. So obviously in this case, some of these things aren't as relevant because no one was moving. It was gridlocked. Everyone was at a standstill, right? So, but we would always suggest having warning devices such as flares or triangles in your car in case you broke down on the side of the road, not obviously stranded like this, but extra warm clothing, be it a warm blanket, gloves, hat, scarves, a parka, maybe even a sleeping bag or something of that nature. To help keep you warm. You want to have a heavy but maybe a light-colored jacket in case you do need to get out of the vehicle. And we really do urge people to stay inside of their vehicles. That's where they're going to be the warmest. But they should probably get out from time to time to make sure that their exhaust pipe is not clogged with snow or mud or debris due to possible carbon monoxide poisoning. So definitely want to get out to check for that. But make sure you have window washer solvent. You know, sometimes when you're driving and all of a sudden you hit inclement weather and you go to, you know, wipe your windshield wiper and realize you don't have any solvent, so you're smearing, and that certainly impacts your visibility. Make sure you have a flashlight with extra batteries. Make sure that you have drinking water, non-perishable snacks, be it snacks for you, your children, your pets if you're traveling with pets, things like nuts, granola bars, chocolate, candy, anything. Even though fruit isn't non-perishable, but I suggest fruit as well, but something to for you to eat should you be stranded there. Make sure that your phone is charged. If you turn off your car, obviously, if you're going to be stuck on the road like people were for many hours, you want to conserve your fuel as best as you can. So we really recommend not letting your gasoline tank go below a half a tank, but certainly try to keep it as full as possible. And only start your car maybe for every 10 to 15 minutes. Not every 10 to 15 minutes. That's not what I mean. 10 to 15 minutes maybe within an hour, just long enough to sort of warm up, but then turn it off so that you conserve your fuel.
And that's one of the things that I had questions about. Virginia Senator Tim Kaine was saying that he did just that. He was on the road, like so many people. He was on the road for 27 hours. He was making the trip from Richmond to Washington, D.C., a trip that usually takes him about 2 hours. But you know, I wonder, and I'm certainly not a car expert, you more so than I, Regina, but I do wonder what impact, first of all, might that have on your battery? And with temperatures between 19 and 13 degrees overnight, sure. He said he would fall asleep, but then the cold would wake him up every 20 minutes. So, sure. You know, I guess, silly me, I would be so tempted to leave my car.
Just let it run.
Yeah, but I guess you're not suggesting that you're not recommending that.
We're not. I mean, obviously, if you get so cold that you can't stand it, obviously, you should run your car. But particularly in a circumstance like this, I don't think anyone probably expect it. That they would be stuck in traffic and in absolute gridlock like they were for as long as they were. Depending on how much gas you have, I think I read an article about the congressman, and I believe he had filled up at some point. But imagine if you were there either with an electric vehicle even, or I didn't, you know, shudder to think about that actually. But imagine if you're there and you don't have very much gas to start with, you know, so I think you'd have to use your best judgment, but certainly the cold does take a toll on the battery as well. So I'm sure there were some people who probably had dead batteries when it was all said and done. I can tell you that within the 48-hour period when all this started, AAA received in the D.C., Virginia area about 3,500 calls.
Wow. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about keeping you safe when the next winter storm hits. What you need to do, what you don't need to do in the event, of course, that you are stuck at home without power, whether or not you are stranded in your vehicle without power. If you were without power in your home over the past couple of days and now have power, we would like to hear from you. Also, perhaps if you were out in Virginia or other parts of the region during this winter storm and were stuck, we'd like to hear from you as well. What did you do when you were stuck at home or stuck on the roadway over the past several days? Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Also, wanted to let you know that after the break, we're also going to share with you one of the very serious dangers of losing power at your home. Of course, that's carbon monoxide poisoning and how to avoid that that silent killer. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a bit. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Yvette calling in from Virginia. We're going to talk to you in just a bit. Also, we're going to talk to Bruce, who is calling in from Virginia. So please stay on the line. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are giving you the information you need to know to keep you safe when the next winter storm hits wherever you happen to be. Our guests are home safety expert Charlie Hawkins and Regina Ali, public and government affairs manager for AAA Mid-Atlantic. Lines are open. If you were without power at home, or perhaps you may have been one of the thousands stranded on the road in Northern Virginia over the past several days because of this winter storm, we'd like to hear from you. What did you do? How did you get through it? Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Yvette calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Yvette. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Our electric went off around 10 a.m., and it didn't come back on until about 11:30 p.m. Every year, throughout the year, I buy batteries. I keep extra the grill fluid and charcoal in case the lights go off. I can cook on my grill. I always keep wood in my fire pit outside, a little small fire pit, in case it get cold in the house. I can warm my hands or whatever it may be. Every room has a flashlight. I turn the batteries upside the opposite way so it won't use up the charge.
Hmm.
I buy those little white lights from Dollar Tree. They are very, very good. I buy them throughout the year. It takes 3 AAA batteries, and it pretty much can light a room. Not that bright, but it'll light the room so you can see. So I do this throughout the year ever since I was young. That's how I was raised. Always wash the tub and fill the tub with water in case frozen pipes, and you can use the water for your commode. Because once you flush your commode once or twice, you don't no longer have any more water in your commode.
Wow.
And I buy peanut butter and jelly and bread, the Lunchables, the cold food, milk and cereal. Because you don't have heat.
So, but here's the question, though, Yvette. Strawberry or grape?
Grape.
Okay.
great.
Okay. I'm just, you know, that's important.
Strawberry. I can't get in with that strawberry. I'm like, great.
I'll take both. Charlie, how did she do? It sounds like she's got it together.
No, definitely. She does great. I mean, she definitely let us know that it's something that she's has been doing for, you know, quite a while, just to prepare, even with the inconsistency in our weather throughout the years. But, no, she's doing great. Only thing I would add, even though we are in the realm of technology, I still urge people to get either a solar-powered or battery-powered two-way radio just in case, like, the power is out for so long and your chargers run out on your phones. You still will be able to contact someone if the storm lasts, you know, more than a night, or if we just have, like, a complete blizzard. It's always nice to have a old transistor or, like, a two-way radio. They still have the crank two-way radios, the solar-powered ones, and battery-powered. It's always good to just have those just in case that part of our technology fails us at some point.
How much would something like that cost?
Very inexpensive, depending on the size. And the style that it's used to power up, somewhere any between 20 to about $50.
Okay. Yvette, thank you so much for your input. You stay safe this winter. Let me go to Bruce. Bruce calling from Virginia. Bruce, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I'm 60 years old, and you know, other than a few snowstorms, it came too fast.
Mm-hmm.
14 inches in 5-6 hours, you can't do nothing with it. You know, people need four-wheel drives. They need to stay home. Do away with Waze. Do away with Google. You got people coming from Florida on a two-lane road they've never been on before. You know, mountain terrains, you know, like Brook Road, man. You know, I had to bring a 963 out there to clear fallen trees. You know,
what is a 963?
A cat loader that weighs 40,000 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what it takes. It takes equipment to move snow. It takes good equipment. You can't have junk breaking down. A lot of plows are breaking down because, why? They were old, and then the snow came so fast, it was heavy. Anybody that deal with snow, know when snow comes, it's going to be heavy. You got to have new equipment to move this stuff. You got to have equipment with tracks, equipment with rubber tracks, you know, not tires. Tires will spin, chains, you know. And you got to have veterans out there. A VDOT had a lot of rookies out there scared to put the plow down and move snow. You know, on Brook Road today, I had to tell the boy to put the plow down and just go. You know, just things like that, you know.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for your insight. I learned something today. And you know, if you're out there continuing to work this winter, you be safe. Thank you so much. So, you know, what about that, Regina? He made some interesting points. Again, there were so many people, and let's be clear, you know, we are talking about a federal highway. This is the main artery from the Northeast all the way down south, but certainly the Mid-Atlantic, one of the most congested roads in this country. And with this coming, it would seem to me that a lot of people did not, however fast it was coming, they certainly mm-hmm. did not heed, you know, the warning. And as Bruce just said, we got mm-hmm. caught, and we got caught badly.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And thank Bruce for being out there and his work, helping to clear the roads. It's a dangerous job, regardless. And you're dead on, spot on with this, Harold. It is one of the most congested corridors on a good day, okay? On a good day, it is one of the most congested highways in the nation. So when you add in all of these other factors, you know, the snow coming down so quickly, first the rain and then turning into ice, the downed trees, disabled vehicles, side roads. I mean, literally the entire I-95 was not only paralyzed, but even the surrounding roadways, the arterial roadways, were at a standstill.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, I hear everything he's saying, and you know, you don't want to play Monday morning quarterback, but certainly people are asking questions of VDOT. I know it's you know, premature to speculate what was going on behind the scenes. I don't work at VDOT, so I don't know what was going on or what plans were in place, or if this just happened so quickly that they were somewhat limited in how they could respond or react. But this is really why it's critical that VDOT, and I believe they're doing this, will basically conduct an investigation to basically see what happened, what could or could have been done, what could have been done differently in this matter, so that we don't see history repeat itself.
Charlie, I do want to talk about one of the more serious situations that we see year after year, particularly, unfortunately, when we lose power, and that is the use of generators. Right now, for example, the Prince George's County Police Department is in the process of investigating two deaths in Brandywine because of what appears to be carbon monoxide poisoning in a house where a generator was left running inside of the house. Can you kind of give us the generator 101? First of all, how do they work for those of us who don't have them, and why is it that they can be such a critical tool when you run out of power, but also kind of, you know, the dangers? First of all, how do they work?
So a generator is pretty much a very large power bank. The only thing is it's ran usually by gasoline. You even have some diesel. They might even have some kerosene-driven generators out there. But the most frequent ones, especially household or residential, that you can just go to your, you know, your local hardware store to buy to power up your utilities and, like, your items, stuff like that around the house, it's going to be gasoline-powered. But just like anything that is gasoline-powered, let's think of your car, for instance. You have an exhaust. Once that gasoline burns off to give your car acceleration, the liquid gas is actually going to turn to a vapor, right? So it's going to need to go somewhere, which it goes out through your exhaust. So if you ever stood behind anyone's car when they're warming it up or they revving it up and you just get that very, very strong smell to almost to the point where you can get lightheaded from it, that's the gasoline burning off from the engine. So it's essentially a small engine. They have them very large also. And it just it's used to provide electricity, but it's just gasoline powered.
So where do you put it if, because this is the thing that I'm wrestling with. I understand that some people may have garages, but if it's an engine and you have it plugged up, and it's supposed to be outside. So, okay, so if it's outside, do you run the cords, like, through the door, or because the other thing is, and, you know, and help me with this, because I don't have one, and if you have a portable generator and you're running it, let's say you're running it at night and you don't have any power and you are at home and you're trying to stay, gosh, if you're trying to stay warm and you're running a portable heater or something like that, but you don't want to leave the house unlocked or the door cracked, so how does that work?
It usually works fairly simple. So first thing you want to do, actually, when you're running a generator, you definitely want to keep it at least 20 feet away, not just from the house, away from any door that can be opened at any time, any window, any type of vent system that can be opened, because that gas is going to turn straight into fumes, and that fumes is going to pretty much do the damage through the air, and wherever the wind takes it is where it can take it. Since if this generators are used particularly for emergency purposes, you wanted to use a heavy-duty outdoor extension cord. What I mean by that, it's going to be weatherproof, so it can get wet, it can withstand the elements, but it also can withstand a door being closed on it, and it won't snap in half. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people can run it through their garage door window, but like I said, you still want to keep that generator as far as possible. I know the extension cords only go but so long, but 20 feet is usually referred from your window. Now, if you want to keep your window half mass open so you can get those cords out, if you feel comfortable with that, that's ideal. But a lot of people will put their extension cords under the opening at the bottom of their door and just close the door on top of it. So they're still able to secure their door, whether it's coming from the garage or their front door. But you definitely want to get a heavy-duty extension cord so you're able to still secure your door at times.
I'm going to take a break, but before we do and before we say goodbye to Regina Ali, Regina, did you have some final thoughts about safety on the roads during a winter storm if you happen to be stranded? Any final thoughts about that?
Sure. Well, certainly, again, you want to make sure that you stay in your car. Hopefully your phone is charged that you can make a phone call. If it's not a situation like this, if you just simply break down, you know that you can make a phone call. But basically prepare. I mean, we hope that something like this doesn't happen again anytime soon, but we can't overstate the importance again of having that emergency kit. We didn't talk about some other things like abrasive material should you become stuck in your, you know, again, not when you're stranded like we were, like we saw the last day or two, but things like that. Make sure you have jumper cables. I think we talked about drinking water. It's even important to have a first aid kit, and that's something, again, that you should have in your car all of the time. So, yeah, we just want people to be safe out there. Make sure this is certainly probably not going to be the end of what we see as far as winter weather goes this year. Certainly there's winter weather predicted in some parts of the DMV later this week. So just be mindful. If they're telling you to stay off the roads and you have that option, please do so. Make sure that your car is in good shape. Make sure that your battery is in good working order. We do free car care checks across the region at our AAA car care centers. You can do that. Make sure your battery, your tires. Tires are really important in this type of weather. But if officials are advising you to stay home, you really, really, if you have that option, should do so, because unfortunately once you get out there and if you get stuck, then there's a whole nother issue as we've seen. But we also want people to be mindful of the snow plows and make sure that they're giving them enough room to do their jobs. Be mindful of tow truck drivers out there, our law enforcement officers. Pay attention to the move over laws. Slow down. Make sure you're decelerating in these icy and snowy conditions.
Yeah, because particularly as it relates to the snow plows, we also did lose three people on the road a couple of days ago in Montgomery County because they slid into the back of a snow plow while driving on those ice and snow slick roads. So certainly good advice. Regina Ali with AAA Mid-Atlantic, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Be safe out there. Take care.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, more about staying safe in your home when the winter weather hits hard. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue conversation, giving you information you need to know to keep you safe when the winter storm hits again, wherever you happen to be. We're continuing with Charlie Hawkins, home safety expert. So, Charlie, we talked about generators and the like, but what other kinds of things should people have in their home in the event that they lose power, particularly if we're talking about loss of power for more than a day, when perhaps staying at a hotel is not an option?
Definitely, you want to keep extra blankets around because during the winter months, one of the most important things when it comes to a power outage in the winter months is to stay warm. A lot of people probably do not have the option of self-heating as far as fireplaces. And if you know, with modern homes nowadays, a lot of people have electric appliances, even electric accessories as far as fireplaces. So they actually lose a lot more when the electric goes out. As far as extra blankets, non-perishable foods, definitely if you do have a grill, that will be ideal. If you don't have too much non-perishable foods, you have something in the freezer that you can take out just for nourishment, that will be recommended to cook on a outdoor grill.
What would you recommend? I'm sorry, go ahead, please continue.
Flashlights, batteries, because as you lose electricity, you're definitely losing lighting in general. Candles, just pretty much taking it back to the Stone Age. Just imagine trying to get through a couple of days without any electrical device, and you pretty much can come up with your own supply list for your specific needs, right? I know a lot of people who don't watch TV, so like keeping their phone charged for entertainment during these times won't be a problem for them. It's really just sitting down and thinking of what you already have, which a lot of people will be surprised of what will help you that you already have that you don't use on a regular basis because you do have electricity, you do have heat going on. But it's just really sitting down and looking at your preferences as far as what will make you more comfortable if the power will go out, and then work your list up from there.
You mentioned, you know, candles. I think a lot of people are concerned about open flame. What do you suggest? I guess flashlights are probably much, much better than open flame. I know a lot of people like to burn candles and the like, but certainly open flame's a consideration. And to that point, just a short story, and I'd be interested in your thoughts about this. Years ago, when I was living in Buffalo, New York, where Buffalo is notorious for brutal and often dangerous winters, in old homes, a lot of people would heat their homes with the ovens, where they would turn on their ovens if, for example, if they lost power, but these ovens are gas ovens, they would light their ovens and leave the oven doors open, and that would not only warm the kitchen, but eventually warm the rooms that may be on that first floor. But certainly those kinds of things are you know, are particularly dangerous if you have an oven door open with a live flame or even a stove with an open flame on it.
Yes, definitely. I've grown up with people who were doing that pretty much all of my younger life. that even though that method is particularly effective, just because, like you said, if you have gas-powered utilities in your house, you will get a flame. You will have the gas pumping through, and it will heat your house. The only thing about that is it's gas at the end of the day. Only thing that's keeping you from becoming, you know, very sick or any type of harm coming to you or your family while this is happening is that open flame. Now, if that open flame goes out, that gas, it's going to still run. So you have that chance of just that poison gas in the air, that carbon monoxide. And that's going to be a lot more pure than, you know, the gas, liquid gas burning off to exhaust, but it's pretty much similar to the same thing. And also, if you get up and you smell a bunch of gas, like, oh, the pallet went out, and you go to light the pallet again, now you have gas going through the whole house, it could potentially ignite the entire house all at once just because you don't know how long the actual gas has been running without this pallet light on.
Yeah, good point. And as we've seen, I remember covering a story many, many years ago where, for whatever reason, as you said, the flame went out, there was gas in the house, the homeowners woke up, but they also had carpet, and the static electricity that was created in the carpet caused a home explosion with significant loss of life. So, you know, certainly something to consider there. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Doug calling from Virginia. Doug, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was calling about the incident about being on 95.
Yes, sir.
I was stuck on 95 for about 25 hours total. And wow. With all them, what they were saying about they was bringing us water or they was checking on us, not where we were. They were not doing anything like that. We seen the police drive by us. We tried to flag them down. They kept on going. Because we had people around us that was elderly people. We had kids around us. None of us around us had food because me, I'm just coming from work going home. So I wasn't thinking of packing my car with food. But I was out there for over 25 hours with no food, no water, no nothing. And when we tried to flag these people down, they just kept on going.
How did you, I mean, 25 hours is 25 hours, okay? Okay, it's a day, but certainly you weren't planning on it, as you said. You weren't in the mind, you weren't in a survivor's mindset, as you said. You were going home. How did right. you handle that, Doug?
Well, yeah, I listened to a little bit of music and, you know, and I started writing some stuff down. But at the end of the day, you know, I got tired of doing that. So it was just to the point then the temperature started dropping. Then when the temperature started dropping, I mean, I started out coming down there with a half a tank of gas. And when we finally got off of 95, my gas light was on. And I guess by the grace of God, I made it to the gas station before I ran out of gas.
How did you conserve gas? Our expert from AAA was saying, you know, you should turn your car off when the car warms up and you know, do that intermittently. Is that what you did to conserve gas?
That's exactly what I did. I turned my car on, blasted the heat, got as hot as I could, had my jacket. I did have a work jacket over there. So I left it open so the heat would go through the work jacket. And then when I felt the temperature dropping, I would take that jacket, wrap it around me, and I just dealt with it as long as I could.
Were you able to sleep at all?
I think I might have slept just from being tired, because I had just went to work at 3 o'clock in the morning. I left my house to go to work. So I had been up all day working. I worked through the snowstorm. And I work outside, so I was working through the snow. I drive trucks for a living, so mm-hmm. I was driving, delivering all through the... And then when I got on the interstate, you know, it was just a tiresome day. So I think I would slept, maybe doze off here and there, but the only sleep that I got was between 3:30. That's when I got on the phone with my wife, because, of course, my phone charger died.
Oh.
So the only way I could get through, I had to go through my company laptop and go to FaceTime her on Facebook. And by 3:30, I just told her, I said, I'm just going to try to lay down here as long as I can, just try to get it over with. And I might have went to sleep for 2 hours. I was back up around 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Well, Doug, I'm glad that you made it through safely, just like the thousands of others who were on I-95. And we appreciate you calling in and sharing your story with us. You take care and stay safe. I want to thank you, Charlie Hawkins, as well, for sharing your expertise with us. As always, you are a wealth of information, and hopefully we can help some others stay safe during the severe weather this winter. So, Charlie, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you.
We also want to thank Regina Ali from AAA Mid-Atlantic for sharing her expertise. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, January 5th, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.